Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paul Hawksby
and Andy Jacobs,
and this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. We were joined in the studio by Elliot Steele, comedian, Crystal Palace fan. Was funny, but also very
poignant.
Interesting. Yeah, poignant, really, on an illness that has struck his family. Told us a bit about that. Scott Kyle and James Marshall came in. They are in a play that's... it's got its 20th anniversary, and it centres around the rivalry between Rangers and Celtic. That was a very interesting chat with the guys. And then popping in to see us was a former footballer, former Palace apprentice with Gareth Southgate and Andy Woodman, the Bromley manager, as a kid. John Budden, he's written a great collection of short stories, some of them sports-related, football-related. So we chatted to John. We enjoyed that. We had a chat we found out what Andy wore for the Met Gala.
Exactly.
Which was great. He was as outlandish as ever. So here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
Yes, well, wasn't that sad about PSG?
Yeah, there is PSG. A certain amount of whatever the French for Schadenfreude is.
I know.
There
Jason is a certain was amount. Very funny, Jason.
Yeah, has anyone. He did a French. Was Pepe Le Pew in there?
I think that was more just saying how funny you thought it was that they were out.
They will get there in the end. Because
they might. They've never been further away than they are now, although they are building a young team, so who knows. But it seems a long way away. Mbappe, he was too Mbobbe for me. He was rubbish.
Too Mbobbe.
He was absolutely useless. I mean, I know he's a great player, but boy, he was poor in that game last night.
Yeah. Do you think he didn't fancy... I mean, we're going to have a chat about it a little bit later on. I wonder if now he'll be able to announce that he's going to Real Madrid, because he couldn't until they were out of the tournament.
It'd be very funny if they don't win it when he goes there.
Sorry. We'll be so shocked when he announces it, won't we?
It's amazing, really. At PSG were unlucky. They hit the woodwork, you know, six times in the tie and all that. It was amazing, really. I was listening to our great friend Ali McCoist, though. It was very... He must have made a lot of great runs in his career and not been found, because he gets really exasperated if that happens in a game.
He's
absolutely mad if people don't take the right option. But fair enough.
Well, I suppose you're seeing it in your mind's eye.
Yeah, of course.
As a player sometimes, he knows the run he would make, and he's probably wondering why someone's not making it. That makes perfect sense.
There's going to be a new comedy about FIFA from the creator of the brilliant W1A.
Yeah, that's right, John Morton, yeah.
But it's quite hard to be funnier than the real thing, really.
This is the thing, it does kind of get beyond...
Dr. Evil as Gianni Infantino.
It does kind of get beyond parody at times, isn't it? But I think they're writing it at the moment. But apparently all the people from W1A, Hugh Bonneville and the gang, they all go in there and take over FIFA.
It was a very funny show, that.
Yeah.
And what have I got? Oh, yeah, you were talking there about people who sound like people.
Yeah, what, people that sound like people? Who are you, Barbara Streisand? What are you talking about?
People.
You did. Oh, yeah. No, you said to me that today, I've got a couple of stories that feed into an old phone call we got one day on the show back in the day.
So the first story was about, you've heard this story before, the fact that bacon, butties, steaks and sausages can make your brain shrink. Apparently,
I haven't heard that before.
Meat, apparently, too much meat can affect the grey matter in your brain.
Okay.
Anyway, they quoted this bloke. Worried bacon fan Barry Davis, 45. Just look at his plate.
So next time we see the great Barry Davis, the commentator, I'm hoping Barry will say, Barry, lovely to see you again. He'll say, yes, don't confuse me with worried bacon fan Barry Davis. I'm always getting those two confused. Hello, Barry. I always loved your commentaries. Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? No, that wasn't me. That was the commentator. I'm worried bacon fan,
it's
Barry Davis.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the other one is a story about things that are unusual items found in sewers. And
well, I mean, is it a top 10 list? Because I'm probably guessing what's number one.
Well, that's true. No, it's false teeth, underwear, bed frame, Dora the Explorer figure.
Random things that have been found. These aren't like the top 10 list. Not another
Dora. Distressed looking Ken doll. Not Ken doll, Nagasaki.
Yeah.
Anyway, that isn't the one. Among the bizarre things found by Severn Trent. Well, anyway, it's sewer blockages lead is a bloke called Grant Mitchell.
Oh, really?
You don't know what's in that sewer.
Get yourself down that sewer and take the distressed Ken out.
Anyway.
Where's me Dora the Explorer figure?
But the best one we had in the old days was that bloke who, he looked like Bruce, his name was Joe Raw, but he looked like Bruce Grobbelaar.
We asked for photographic evidence. It's long before the days you just stick a picture up on Twitter or whatever. Mm. I think he had to take a photo. We had to wait 2 days till it was developed. No, he did. He phoned us up. He said, hello, lads. He was a lorry driver, wasn't he? He said, my name's Joe Raw, but I look like Bruce Grobbelaar.
Yeah, it's fair enough.
I don't quite know where it took us. So what do you want, a sort of famous name?
You know, if you've got a famous name, you can't just say it. Somehow you've got to prove it.
Okay. Would you want to see passports or something?
No, not as credit card details.
I suppose if you have got a famous name and you obviously think it's... if your name is David Walliams, although no one's called that.
Yeah.
Oh, we see you were flanked at the latrines by David Walliams. You kept looking... there was a bloke having a jimmy next to Andy without going into too much, and I popped into the loo at the end of the show and Andy's kind of nodding his head towards this guy and thinking, what does he want me to do, what's happened? And then it was only afterwards I realised it was TV's David Walliams.
He must have been doing a show at Virgin.
Flanked at the latrines has been a rich scene over the years, isn't it? We've had some goodness. I must say
that's one of my finest, really.
David Walliams. Well, mine is the late, great Bobby Moore, which is what kicked the whole thing off.
I'd say that's better than David
Walliams.
When
I had a chat with Bob at Wembley on a very cold night. And so that was it. So flanked at the latrines. Let's dust that one off, shall we? We always love.
I must have done some other ones as well, but I can't think. They'll come back to me.
Talksport.com, text 1889, tweet TSHNJ. Now, Andy said to me, you know, I was trying to think of alternative guests. And Andy said to me, did you see those pictures yesterday of the Fulham players flying kites? And I said, yeah, I did. And I said, obviously, a lot of Arsenal fans are concerned they're not maybe taking the City game as seriously as they should be. Rather than working on set pieces and outstop Erling Haaland, they've been flying kites. So Andy said to me, well, maybe we should speak to someone from the kite business to get the latest developments in kite technology. And I thought, blimey, that's pushing it even for me.
Desperate,
I don't mind a sideways guess, but blimey. So anyway,
but a great opportunity for them to push the sport of kite flying.
Is it a sport?
Well, it's pastime.
So anyway, our crack production team reached out to people in the kite business, despite my better judgment, and they caught up with master kite maker Sanjar Kiam, right? Who apparently appears overnight with Paul Ross on Extra Time.
It's interesting.
He claimed not to be a massive... Anyway, he got in touch with Georgia, our assistant producer, and said, hi, Georgina. That's a bad start.
It's
anyway.
Not a great start, really. It's not her name. But never mind.
He said, I saw the video online and it's pretty good. He's issued a statement for us. For me, kite flying is a team activity and it's something you do with friends and family. As you can see in the video, while a player is flying, the teammate is collecting and managing the string as they work together. So I suppose it is a sporting teamwork thing.
Is.
I guess it signifies that they're confident in their game plan. Have you seen them recently? So they can spare the afternoon for this leisure activity.
Could have done with the kite on Saturday at Brentford v Fulham. It wasn't a great game.
So there he is. I wasn't aware that it was stopped. And if that is the case, then it's an overreaction to what is normally a joyful activity. Not when you're preparing to play the best team in the world, though, Sanjar, I would argue. He said, I don't think I can add more to the story. I'm not familiar with the team.
It's a shame, really, isn't it? Because, you know, he could have pushed
Might lead us today, as well as flanked at the latrines and looking like Bruce Grobbelaar when your name's Joe Royal, was... I get the feeling they're not taking it as seriously as I would have hoped they'd done. So we're after some tales of you or others maybe not taking it quite as seriously as they should have done. So go on, we'll throw that at you as well.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
We did ask you earlier on who you were flanked at the latrines by, as Andy was yesterday. It's back in the consciousness because TV's David Walliams was flanking you yesterday, wasn't he? After the show. And had some interesting ones come in. A beautiful random one here. If only I can find it. Everything's gone missing again. There's too many of them coming in. So many.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dave in Stockport, on the road trip from Vegas to LA in 2002, we stopped in the middle of nowhere in the Nevada desert in a place called Peggy Sue's Diner. Next to me, flanking me at the latrines, Eddie the Eagle Edwards.
No. That is a shocker.
That does take some doing, doesn't it? What a fantastic one. My name is Mike Riley, but I'm not the ex-referee. And there was a very nice one those. This was Andy talking about Barry Davis, who was in the papers today. Not that one. Yeah,
Worried Bacon
Worried
fan.
Bacon fan, Barry Davis,
45.
Not the legendary commentator. Martin in Farnborough said, I have a friend named George Best. When we were young, he had a house party and the police were called due to excessive noise. When they asked for names, George said, yeah, I am George Best. Yeah, imagine a bunch of mouthy 15-year-olds. In the end, the police officer had enough of it and insisted on seeing ID. But when they did, they laughed it off and said, well, just turn it down a bit. Thing is, George and his old man were both gooners, says Martin. So thank you very much for that, Martin.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Yeah, you asked me what I wore at the Met Ball.
What did you wear for the Met Gala?
The thing that Kim Kardashian, I couldn't get my waist in that.
No, I saw that and thought that wasn't for you.
No, it's not good.
I'm always quite surprised that they dress up that much and they manage to be such of a draw for a room full of London coppers. Really? I can't think they're that much of a draw. Of course not.
Not that Met Ball.
But
I don't get this thing either, that Rita Ora was doing it. There were quite a few of them.
Doja
Cat. It's like a sort of
bowling
body.
Doja Cat.
Bowling Doja.
Do you think she plays much amateur cricket with Alex
Stewart? I don't think she does, really.
Okay, fair enough.
I can't see Phil Tufnell wearing one of those body suits either.
No, but you would. But Phil's the sort of bloke you could say, is it Doja Cat's outfit that she wore for the Met Gala?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, mate, yeah. Would you wear that? Yeah, all right, I'll wear that. Yeah, Phil's the sort of bloke who probably would.
It wouldn't be a good idea.
He'd turn up for the PCA dinner in Doja Cat's see-through gossamer complete body stocking.
Yeah, that's what it is.
She's wearing a pair of tights over her own body.
It's not a good look, really.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't want to see you dressed.
I'm obviously hideous in that. Yeah. Another thing I won't be wearing or buying in the fashion items, anything by Balenciaga.
Oh, yeah.
I don't get Balenciaga. I don't get this massively...
03717223344. If you do get Balenciaga and want to weigh in on that,
massively expensive facsimiles of everyday items is what it is,
including
oversized football shirts.
Make you look like a player from the early
90s. This one's mad. This is American actor Michael Shannon.
Yeah.
Brought along a Balenciaga bag, which was shaped like a packet of cheese and onion crisps.
Yeah.
It's made of leather and costs £1,473. Just bring a bag of Chris, maybe £1.39.
It would be great if you had someone someone with no filter just standing there next to the photographers as they all walk on with it. Like a drunk. Imagine we sent Alan and Tom Skinner together and Razor. So that was.
They were doing the catwalk, like Joan Rivers.
They're probably all got ailed up and they're standing there, they've actually got no filter. So you've got someone like Razor saying, blimey, what's that you're wearing? Yeah. Is that a bag? Can I have one of your crisps, mate? Or it's a Balenciaga bag. It would be good, wouldn't it? That's the kind of commentary we want.
That's what we should get.
Why is it Alan? Imagine Alan at the Met Gala. He'd still have a Ralph Lauren polo on and a pair of jeans, wouldn't he, and some deck shoes. The best one, though, was everybody was turning up with some sort of item that got them noticed. Mm. So step forward Camila Cabello, the pop star, not the plumber.
No, obviously.
Yeah, that's right. Who decided she would take a golden rose in a block of ice.
Why?
Well, don't ask me. That's what she took. She took a golden rose in a block of ice and was heard saying to her people, my hands are cold, I can't feel my hands.
Well, yeah,
that's
because you've got a block of ice.
That's because you're holding a block of ice, Camilla.
It's not great, is it?
Which is exactly what Razor would have said to her if he'd heard her say it when we send him next year to the Met Gala.
Cat Spanton of Worthing.
Cat Spanton. Bowling Cat Spanton.
Doja Cat Spanton of Worthing.
Doja Cat Spanton of Worthing.
Wrote to the Daily Star.
Oh, well done.
She wasn't at the Met Ball.
You sure?
Yes. She says, at the Worthing v Braintree football final yesterday.
Well, that was on the same night. She wouldn't go to the Met Gala, would she?
Braintree supporters had a large banner, "Just Stop Ollie," a reference to Oliver Pierce, fine Worthing footballer, by amusing analogy to the "Just Stop Oil" protesters.
Are you AI at this point? Why are you talking like that?
Because that is how it's written.
Okay, we haven't got to read it like that.
Well, there's no other way of reading it. You can't bring that to life. It's just like one long sentence that makes no sense at all.
Do you want a double flanking at the latrines?
Yeah, I do.
This is a sensation. Mm. You're going to go something to beat this. Double flanking. You are the meat in this particular latrine sandwich. Mm. Big Mal from Ballymena. Went to Old Trafford to watch United get beat in the Champions League against Dortmund. Headed back to the hotel to drown my sorrows. After a few beers, went to the toilet muttering to myself, how did we get beat by them? They're not even a great Dortmund team. Looked one side, there was the late, great Terry Venables.
Wow.
Looked to the other side, there was Eusebio.
I'm going to say Usain Bolt. No. Still, Eusebio's good.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're obviously there on some kind of Champions League jolly, I guess. Mm. But what about that? Well done, Mal. We're going to go something to beat the double flanking of Terry Venables and Eusebio. Thank you very much for that.
Talking of old players, Sir Geoff Hurst has revealed he watches Match of the Day on his iPad.
Okay.
Hasn't he got a telly?
That's a very odd comment, then, isn't it? I mean,
why would you want to watch Match of the Day on a little iPad when you could watch it on a big, you know, 55-inch telly?
Well, you're asking the wrong person.
Well, I want to ask Sir Geoff Hurst. Okay. Bring him in.
Next time we get him on. Next time we get him on. This is an odd flanked at the latrines. Rob, the Wolves fan, says, I was once at a function at Ludlow Racecourse where I was standing at the urinals when alongside me was the MP, John Redman. I think it was John Redwood. So, I hope he didn't call him John Redman. He was Welsh Secretary at the time. Oh, in that case, it was definitely John Redwood. And he was obviously taking a leak. Oh, that's why he's put it in there. Thank you, Rob. Thank you very much for those. Yeah, a few more flanked at the latrines if you really want to do that. And you can keep those coming. Talksport.com/H&J. Text to 81089 or tweet to TSHNJ. There's TSHANDJ. I didn't get around to telling you yesterday, we were talking about celebrity cruises. The one that really interested us was 14 nights around Iceland and Norway with Peter Beardsley.
Is that genuinely true?
Yeah. Blimey. So there you are, you turn up with your cases and you jump on, you go to Iceland, you're going to Norway, and you're getting the full Monty of Pete's career, the full thing.
That'll be quite interesting for one night, but not 14 nights of Peter Beardsley.
I used to occasionally ghost a column with Peter, and it was hard work.
You could write his script.
Well, I found it very difficult to coax a story out of him. Maybe it was my poor journalism, but I found at the time, I was doing columns with other people and didn't have those issues. So I don't know if people really. I mean, if you're going to be touring around Norway and Iceland, and you've got to do all the donkey work, coaxing a story out of Peter, it's not going to be ideal, is it?
Not ideal.
You want him to be sort of fulsome in his storytelling. My experience was blood out of a stone, basically. But anyway, that was a long time ago. Yeah. I'm sure he's got a fantastic after dinner set.
By the time you get to Reykjavik, you've heard everything Peter's ever got to do, really.
Like we were saying. So I says to Gary Lineker, yeah, done that one, Pete. Did that one just outside Stavanger. Have I done that? Yeah, you done that one.
It's not ideal, is it?
Must be a bit like that.
Oh, there we go.
Anyway,
I shan't be going on that trip.
Enjoy. Maybe we'll get invited along.
Tonight.
You could go on one of these cruises and just read letters out of the star. It'd be like a piece of kind of terrible performance art, wouldn't it?
Be good.
You've been helicoptered off the ship after about 7 days. Yeah. And they have to helicopter in Peter Beardsley.
One night might be quite fun. I've got a lot of letters that I've kept over the years. Yeah. Some of them I've written myself.
That wasn't a real offer, Andy. I've been bad.
I can't get a letter published now. It's really annoying.
Okay.
I know.
It's a bit of a dream of yours, is it?
Well, I had a great run of sending them letters.
Flanked at the latrines. We're interested in those. Don't forget, talksport.com, text 81089, tweet TSHNJ. We've dusted those downs after Andy and myself in a kind of tandem environment. We're flanked by David Walliams.
I know.
I took over after you'd left off.
You did.
Like we both had to have the story.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
I just went into the producer because he said he was going to send something through to me and it hadn't arrived. So he said, hasn't it arrived yet? And he then proceeded to shake his phone like the way they used to bang an old telly. He said, that's not the way they work. That's not the way Apple sorted. You don't shake it. It doesn't make it any better. You just put the torch on. Anyway, Elliot Steele, as promised, has joined us in the studio. Good afternoon, Elliot.
Afternoon. It's nice to be back.
Good to see you.
Elliot does a bit of MMA fighting. And you were quite taken with a boxing machine outside.
Yeah, I think I broke my knuckle.
Oh, really?
trying to make it through to the
Because you've got a little audience of the production staff. They're all watching. You want to have a go. And so, like, you want to give a good account of yourself.
I did. I was looking at some of the scores and I was like, if I could get the best comedian score on there, that'd be...
Well, you've done... I mean, what score did you get?
I got 901.
901. Yeah, that puts you into
Chris Iwalumo on 909.
And Chris has got a big charity boxing match coming up. I think we're going to chat to him about that. You bet. You're harder than Danny Cipriani.
Yeah, I've just realised.
Not quite as hard as Carlton Cole.
Just off Ollie Mears. Ollie Mears got 903.
Oh wow!
I couldn't believe that.
That's pretty good. But Nigel Botherway, who we've taken the mickey out of, let's
be honest. Have. Not me. Not after I've seen his score.
Nigel 8-9-3.
Nigel played a lot of rugby. He's a man in his sort of mid-60s, if not older.
I know, but you know.
You weren't a million miles off of Tasha Jonas, you know, a world champion and all that. Well, look, fantastic. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. This is without the greatest moment of my life.
Of course it is.
Some of the top scorers. Jermaine Pennant's very good. He was a 9-3-3.
Yeah, I saw Johnny Fisher score. He's a big guy, isn't he? Yeah. I met him a couple of times. He's massive.
He is a big lad, yes. You're out and about. You're going to be doing the Edinburgh Festival, aren't you?
I am. I'm back at the Edinburgh Fringe. I'm also doing my recording a special as well at Top Secret Comedy Club on July 28th. It's all a bit. And then 2 days later, I go to do my new show at the Fringe. So it's very like I feel like a player who's finished the season, but then there's the Euros coming up.
So yeah, tell us a bit about the show.
The title is interesting.
Oh, yeah, I thought the title was hilarious, and then you come and do things like this, and then I have to watch you say soft boy core, and then go, yeah, this wasn't... I should have put a bit more thought into that.
Soft boy core.
I don't even know what it means.
Because, like, soft boys are... Because, like, I had sometimes, in, like, stand-ups, let's be real, stand-ups full of, like... Most comedians aren't going to come in and get 901 on that. They're not even going to have a go, right?
That's fighting talk.
They're losers. Like, that's what a lot of comedians... Yeah. They're just, you know what I mean? They're kind of like people who go at school, they've been picked on a little bit, and then again, which was me, you know. And then, like, I do MMA and that, and a bit of a growth spurt. So now everyone in, like, stand-ups, like, always, oh, you're a bit, but I'm still, like, quite a soft individual.
Yeah.
Like, I still, you know, I'm a very sort of, you know, I'm
sensitive.
Gentle.
Yeah. And but people think because I've got a mullet and a deep voice that I don't feel things too, you know. I nearly cried at that Palace score.
The mullet's an interesting style choice.
Yes.
That doesn't sound like you're a fan of it.
Yeah. It wasn't fulsome in his praise there.
No, but I've noticed it's really come back into fashion. Yeah, I mean, it's a look, if you like that look.
Right. We get the idea.
I've got none, so I can't say anything.
Maybe you could just grow it at the back. Maybe it'll grow at the back if
just a runny will now.
But, I mean, yeah, you're talking about that, being a sensitive soul and having feelings, and you know, your family have gone through it. Your dad, Mark, is been a regular guest on our show over the years. I'm sure a lot of listeners will know him from his work in comedy and journalism on TV. And he's been very ill, but we had some good news the other day, posted some good news about his his cancer treatment, and things are looking good now, which is great.
Yeah, it has ruined the end of the show, him getting better, but it is good. I mean, it's good news for everyone who's a fan of his, but it's bad news for me because now I don't get a property. But the but that's the thing though as well. Like, when you, cancer's this weird subject to talk about on stage because people get really tighten up. Yeah. I'm sure there's like people listening to this now who are like, oh, you can't joke. There are funny moments going through the experience with that, yeah, with a relative. Like, we were in the hospital, and the first doctor who kind of gave a diagnosis, like, there was this really profound moment when my dad, like, is potentially being met with his mortality, yeah, which is a hard thing for a human being to have to go through, especially when your son's there watching. And my dad went to the guy, like, look, just doctor, like, is this curable? And I swear to God, the doctor at this hospital, and I won't say the hospital, he touched the table and went, touch wood.
Oh,
and
no.
We were all like, I was like, no, touching wood's what I do when I need like John McGinn to get a yellow card and an accumulator, and I win £40. Touch the medicine. This is a man's life. Yeah. You can't say touch wood.
It's true.
But you just kind of met with moments like that where you look back on it and you go, that was really funny. And of course, as well, like the NHS, as great as they are and stuff, it's full of human beings. There's just really, it really reminds me of humanity in that, because they kind of, they'll come in and give you some news that you might not want to hear, and then you'll hear them taking a lunch order.
Yeah.
Because one of them's going to prep, and you're just met with this thing where you go, oh my God, this is your job.
Of course.
Like, the same way, like, I would come in here and you've got like a conveyor belt of people who come in all day long. Mm. But they've got that, but with diagnosis.
Yeah.
Like, and it's this insane thing to sort of like witness. It's quite almost like psychedelic in a way, and you just kind of sit there and go like, all right, well, which ones are we going to be today? Are we the ones who come in for the good news? Are we the ones who come in through the bad news? And yeah, and then you look back on it and you kind of go, I hate the idea that there are things you cannot joke about. And I think like illness within a family or something is something that is, look, you
don't
need
some lighter moments throughout, don't you? I'm sure.
Yeah, there's things, you know, there's a really cool.
It was grueling though, wasn't it? You were telling, you don't need to go into all the details.
Yeah, the treatment's really bad. My dad's probably going to be more furious that I've come on here and stolen all the material before him, to be honest.
Yeah, you've got your show out first while he's still convalescing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Just make it, nah, Dad, I don't think you're ready to get him back on stage yet.
He won't be happy about
it.
He'll do the first person stuff when he's back on tour. But yeah, you said sport was a great saviour for him. He's one of these guys that will watch any sport and get into it. And
he loves his cricket.
Yeah, he loves his cricket. Yeah,
and he loves the indoor sport. He loves a bit of snooker and stuff. Oh, like that.
Yeah.
It was kind of immersing himself in that, and it took his mind off of everything.
Well, the like really hard part that he went through was during the darts. Yeah. During like when, you know, Luke Littler was dominating, and that. Just having that to look forward to was that this little 16-year-old is going to go throw some darts at a board and I don't have to think about chemotherapy for a little bit. And that's why sport's important, is because kind of when you overanalyze sports too much, you kind of go, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Watch it. Why am I wasting my time watching this when I could be learning a language, when I could be better? But really, sports, that's why it's important, is because it's a great distraction.
Sure.
And sometimes it gives you, you know, like I always think the football's really there for. The reason footballers get paid the amount they get paid is because you have to go down there and get yelled at by people like me. Yeah. That's what is that. It's like, look, someone's going to yell something. They're going to take their week out on you, but you get to drive a Lamborghini. That's the trade you're making here for kicking the ball well. And that's what I love about sport, and especially like the football and all of that, that you can watch, you know, when you're ill and you can't move off the sofa and you have to watch someone go through that. And then you can put on, like, you know, you start watching Spanish football, you start watching all of these different types of things, like football that, you know, my dad usually probably wouldn't have watched.
Sure.
It then, you know, gives it, now he gets to come out and give more of an insight into things, you know.
I'm sure it'd strike a chord with a lot of the listeners that have been ill or been housebound and have realised just what are important. Well, it's the old Arrigo Sacchi line, isn't it? Football being the most important, the least important things. It's very true.
Oh, it's very true. Good.
Yeah. Your MMA fight, you're still doing your thing?
I still
until
train.
Until you broke your hand on the machine.
I still train here and there to a very, very point. When we say MMA, I mean like, you know, like Sunday League.
Is there an equivalent Sunday League MMA?
But more or less.
Somebody turns up with a kebab and a flag in their hand, a can of lager.
I've seen people turn up to jiu-jitsu tournaments hungover.
Really?
Yeah. And then I've lost the people who've turned up hungover.
That doesn't sound like a good idea, does it? Yeah.
But yeah, I do it to the like lowest level. I just enjoy, like, I love watching the UFC and all of those things. Yeah. And I find, like, just going to the gym regularly, I'm going to lift weights with bad technique and all that. So it's just easier for me to go to an MMA gym where I get a, you know, learn a sport, get a hobby, get to meet interesting people and still stay fit. But I just really enjoy it. And the UFC, you know, I think like it's created such a big, especially in this country with the way that the UK is dominating at the moment. When you look at people like Leon Edwards, Aspinall, we've had Bisping, Paul Crawford over on the weekend. We've had like some really like top level people come out of this country that's now creating this great resurgence. And I think with mixed martial arts, where people are doing it at a younger age now, they're starting when they're 9, they're 10, it's going to, you know, in like, in the next 10 years, this is going to come from like a really interesting sport to watch. Like, it's going to be fascinating. That's interesting.
And we're out of time, unfortunately. Yeah, but your show is at the Underbelly Bristow Square Buttercup Soft Boy Core.
Yeah, I hate the name of that venue, but
yeah,
there we
it's
go.
31st of July, 25th of August.
The Buttercup or the Underbelly?
The Buttercup. Oh, yeah, I'm going to tell some truth in the Buttercup.
Yeah.
No chance to mention Palace, who were brilliant.
Well,
yeah, they
are coming. What can we say? We talked a lot about Palace. It's all going rather well, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll do anything to finish 12th.
Yeah. No, I think the signs are good. As long as you can keep some of those players, the signs are good. Well, look, lovely to see you as always. Give our best to your dad.
It was lovely to see you,
and we will catch up with you soon. Elliot Steele, Soft Boy Court, Underbelly, Bristow Square, Buttercup, 31st to 25th. Not the 12th, we like to point out. Don't go there on the 12th. Good slot, 9:45.
Oh, that's a lovely slot.
That is a great slot. Yeah, good to see you, Elliot. All the best. Thanks very much.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
An Old Firm derby. Huge one coming up this weekend. And there is a play currently in London. It's on a world tour currently. I think it's the 20th anniversary of the play. So many of the listeners who are skinning the game, if they're Celtic or Rangers fans, will be aware of the play. Singing, "I'm Noah Billy, He's a Tim." It's written by Des Dillon. And it's been a kind of cornerstone of one of our guests' life, really. He's starred in it for many years. Scott Carl has joined us, and James Miller is also starring in the play. Good afternoon, guys. Good to see you.
Good afternoon, and a sunny afternoon in London.
It's yes, not so bad. Now, tell us a bit more, Scott, about the play, because it's been a sort of a labour of love, a sort of life's work for you. Happened upon the play completely by accident, didn't you?
Yeah, so I found this play in my local library in Glasgow almost 2 decades ago. I picked up the play and started reading it, and it was about a Rangers fan and a Celtic fan in a prison cell together on the day of the big match, and they both got bets on the match, so the stakes are really high. So whoever wins is going to get their freedom, because their wives will collect the winnings from the bookies and pay the fines. So there's big stakes in it, and I fell in love with the play, and we started putting it on in kind of working men's clubs and, you know, kind of social clubs, and over the course of 5 years it became the biggest show in Scotland, and it grossed over £1 million and stuff at the box office. It's huge.
Yeah, it's a play with a serious message, isn't it, really, around the darker side of the rivalry.
Yeah, well, it kind of tackles sectarianism head on, and we took this show to Northern Ireland. We're going to Belfast next week with it again, so we're back there for 2 nights in Belfast playing at the Mac, and that was a really interesting reaction, because as Glaswegians, James is here as well, we've kind of grew up in Glasgow with the kind of sectarianism in Glasgow, and we think probably we know what we're talking about, and we went to Northern Ireland. It was a big eye-opener for us. And the reaction was fantastic. The kind of the Northern Irish were kind of laughing, saying, "What's it got to do with yous lot?" You know. But it was a relief that they found it as funny as we found it as well.
Yeah.
And it tackles the difficult issues head on.
Yeah, it's probably, James, a good way, isn't it, to get the message across through something that is very funny.
I think so. I think the humour diffuses the tension a lot. But Harry's story kind of brings the two lads together as well to overcome their differences. So yeah, he's the kind of the counterweight to the banter and the
you're the man who's looking after him. The two boys are in the cell and you're looking after him.
Indeed, Harry's got his own story going on. His young grandson is undergoing a big heart operation during the, you know, this course of the play. He's got his own family issues going on, so they kind of, as I say, he inadvertently reveals the situation to them. That brings them together temporarily, at least. And at the end, I don't want to say too much, but it's all kind of tied up together.
Yeah. So it's a roller coaster, lots of laughter, you know, lots of singing, lots of dancing, and even some crying. So it's a brilliant night at the theatre, and we regularly get standing ovations and 5-star reviews and stuff. So it's pretty special. First and foremost, it's an amazing piece of theatre. You don't have to be a football fan to come and see this. The story's universal. It could easily, I mean, we've chatted before about this, the football's a kind of backdrop to this incredible story. It could easily be Montagu Capulet, you know, Israeli-Palestinian. Yeah. It works universal. The story's about two antagonistic young men who don't like each other, and they have to come together to support the other gentleman in the story, who's Harry, who's going through a tough time. Mm. And it's just a brilliant piece of theatre. Yeah. It's just a three-hander. And it's like in a prison cell, the audience are surrounded like the walls of the prison cell. It's just a brilliant piece of theatre.
You brought these shirts in.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think you'd be selling many of those in either club shop. I'll show the, it's a half and half shirt.
The YouTube listeners.
Half and half Celtic Rangers shirt.
It gets very mixed reactions, you can imagine. Depends what side on you're turning. And those are modelled by the girls. So as much as our show is the 20-year anniversary.
I'm going to bring that up, yeah.
But yeah, we've got a female cast that are in London. So when the boys nip over to Belfast next week, the girls take over in London, and it's the first time they've been to London, so it's really, really exciting as well.
So that's all female cast, three women playing those parts.
Yeah, all female cast, and it's brilliant. It's really nice. Obviously, I've kind of been producing the guys showing in a minute as well. I play Billy in it, but it's nice to watch the girls doing it, and kind of there's a different pressure of producing the show as opposed to being in it. So you know, kind of when you're producing and in it, you've got two hats on. Yeah. Whereas it's nice to just produce it with the girls and let them go out there and do their thing, and they're absolutely brilliant.
When you get an opportunity, James, to chat to people who've seen it, do they say, do you know what, it did make me think, you know, maybe I've been at times got a little bit too wrapped up in this.
We did, especially surprisingly Northern Ireland as well. You know, it's the reactions have just been amazing, really. They enjoy the banter. They enjoy the fact there's equal weight to the banter, but they also enjoy the fact that the boys are come together over a bigger issue. You know, I come together over a bigger issue. So
It's perspective, I guess.
The kind of most theatres in the country have got certainly in Scotland, they've got a no colours policy, and this show breaks the mold because people are encouraged to come in their colours. They're coming to support their team, So and that was, for us going to Northern Ireland, when we went to Northern Ireland, people turning up in their colours, and you're going, God, I hope we don't upset the peace process. You know what I mean? That was everybody.
Has there been any trouble at the performance?
No, I mean, as James just elaborated there, it's tit for tat. You know, kind of, there's somebody on stage representing each of the clubs and each of the viewpoints, and they're matched. And there is certain points that Des Dillon, the writer, said that there's certain places he doesn't take the characters, because he doesn't think they could come back from that. Because by the end of the show, you want to like the guys. Do you know what I mean? And they're your dad, your uncle, your son. You know, they're family members that people know, these characters. That's why it's a really strange feeling going onto stage. Normally you go and see a play and it takes you a wee while to get to know the character. You know, what kind of person is this character going to be? As soon as you walk on with that top, the audience have got an expectation of what your views will be and what you're going to say. We did the show in Dublin, and it was St Patrick's weekend. And obviously I play Billy, the Rangers fan. And I got booed on. I hadn't even said a word. It was the most surreal experience of the world, getting like booed on stage. I was like, give me a chance, you know. Kind of,
how's the rivalry now? Is it still as bad as it ever was? Is there more thought about it, that there's less sort of bitterness in the whole
thing? It's a difficult one, because I think recently we had, I know Ali's been on chatting about it, but they're taking the fans out of the stadium. Really took away a huge part of the big match, and it's great that that'll be happening again next season. You need the rivalry, you need it in the stadium. It feeds the atmosphere. That's why we everywhere around the world want to watch it. And when you take one side out, it doesn't work. But I think it's that important thing that, you know, nobody should go to a match and not come home. And I think that's the big part. Going back to Northern Ireland again, as young boys, I mean, we did this show nearly 20 years ago. We went over there as young boys, kind of from Glasgow. And I think what the big lesson we got was, in Northern Ireland, they had to live with the consequences of sectarianism. Whereas in Glasgow, there's, you know, they call themselves 90-minute bigots for, when the football's on, you know, it's tit for tat and it's fair game. Going to Northern Ireland was kind of an eye-opener. So there's never been any trouble at it. And it's bringing in people to the theatre that don't go, and I think that's the most important thing. It gets people into the theatre and fills the empty seats. So
you're at the old Red Lion Theatre in London.
Yes, very exciting.
And you say when you're off to Ireland, there'll be the all female cast doing it. But I see, isn't this like a worldwide tour? You're taking this abroad and everything.
Yes, well the big one next. So we're in London for 2 weeks. That's the guys and the girls, and then the guys go and do Belfast for 2 nights at the Mac, and then we come back and we go to the Edinburgh Festival. So the Edinburgh International Festival. Oh, the both shows are there for the month, and that's the kind of showcase for the world. That's where shows pick it up. I've already had interest from Italy. I did a show in Italy before, the Piccolo Theatre in Milan, and they've expressed an interest. I worked with a company in Finland as well. We've done the stuff we've done in Italy, it's normally bilingual, So James might need to learn some Italian.
Are you football fans, both of you?
Big football fans.
I mean, is it a good idea to tell us who you support, or is that something you keep quiet?
Well, what we always say to people is very well cast, and it has to be. I think if anybody got a sniffy anything else, they would be onto us.
It's that old Ian Paterson thing he wrote, Rab C. Nez, but he never gave Rab a team. You never knew who he said, but you kind of got an idea from where he lived. But he never let on because he didn't want to lose 50% of the audience. So you've embraced that, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's not many shows like it that bring both sides together. And as I say, the story that James represents in it is the kind of, I suppose James is the turnkey, is the referee.
Yeah.
Do you know? And every day, I mean, the game on at the weekend, we're going to be watching that. We've got two shows that day. So it's going to impact the script.
The game impacts the script.
So we're going to need to take all the things that happen. I mean, we used to, we'd put in things like, you remember Ali McCoy's Neil Lennon had their head-to-head?
Yes,
well, that goes immediately in. We're sitting rubbing our hands when stuff like that happens. So we're always hoping that the melting pot is boiling over slightly, at least, because it's good for the show.
And I was telling Jim White you were on today, and he was writing it all down, so you may find him sitting in the front row.
Well, many years ago, I met Jim in a hotel when the show had first come up, and I think he was in for a drink, and I think Ali and a few other folk were there, and I went over with the picture for the show, and he asked to keep it. He says, can I keep that? I've never seen it. It was the two boys in the prison cell together, so it's quite a unique thing to see the two tops. The two boys were locked up many years ago. So
excellent. Well, we wish you well with it, guys. It's a fascinating subject. People can go along and check it out in the old Red Lion Theatre and go and see the guys up in Edinburgh as well. See, and I'm Noah Billy, he's a Tim. And tickets are available now if you go to the old Red Lion Theatre website. And keep an eye up because it's often touring and often all around the country. Good to see you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having us.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Probably hundreds, thousands of stories of apprentices at football clubs. Some stay in the game of football, some don't. And our next guest was an apprentice at Palace alongside Gareth Southgate. And I'm not going to say England manager. I think you probably know that if you're listening to Talksport. And Andy Woodman, you shouldn't need telling. He's the Bromley manager who's just taken them up. They were great mates. Mm. And John was among their group at the time, but he didn't go on to play professional football to their level. But he did become a teacher and a headmaster, and subsequently an author. And his new collection of short stories, We Aim to Live, is out now, and he's popped in to see us. Hello, John.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. I mean, when you think back to those days, how do you feel about it? Well, I mean, you must have been at the time. It must have felt crushing that you didn't get that chance to be a pro.
It was a funny one, really, Paul, because at the end of my 2 years as an apprentice, they offered me a pro contract originally. And then Steve Copper was the manager, and he said, do you know, I think you should go to university because I've done A-levels alongside.
Which he had done, of course.
Yeah, so I went off to Lancaster. He said, stay fit and come back, train when you come home. And so I went up there, played for Lancaster, played for Morecambe. And then there was a bit of interest up there. Man City and Blackburn said, we might want to sign you. So I went back to Palace. Mm-hmm. They said, we'll give you a contract. So I went back. And then after that, I went to St Johnstone in Scotland. So I did a little bit.
Right.
Mainly unsuccessfully. Mm. But I think the issue is, I think what the story's about is I struggled with the culture all the way through.
Yeah.
And I found it hard to get on in that world, I guess. And I suppose that's what the boot room story is about. We aim to live.
It's horrendous, isn't it?
There is one story in the book, of the book of short stories, and there is something that links, and we'll come on to that. But the boot room is purely about the culture in a kind of, was this sort of 80s football dressing room amongst the young boys who in those days...
Trevor Kane, what a horrible bloke. Yeah.
this is old school, alpha male pro in a dressing room and bullying the younger kids who at this stage as apprentices are still... You're cleaning up dressing rooms and cleaning boots as well.
Yeah, when I settled down to write them, I've read a lot about football. I'm still really interested in football. I listened about football, and I was aware that I've never read or seen anything that I thought that actually is what I thought it was like.
Yeah.
It's always filtered, isn't it? The players self-filter. It's filtered through a journalist. It's filtered through the media. And I thought, well, I'm going to piece this together and put it down.
Mm.
And, you know, that's how it felt to me. That's, you know, you arrive in that. I was thinking back when you write it, it's a long time ago now, but I'm sort of a July birthday. I go there at 15, I go into that. And you think, it's quite an environment, really. And I just wanted to capture, for me, how brutal it was. And I wanted to sort of be as honest as I could with it, and that's what I've done with it.
As you're a head teacher now, you must have kids going through professional sports set up. So what sort of feedback do you find from the kids and the parents now? I mean, obviously it's changed, but has it completely changed? Do you hear stories that make you think there's still elements of this going on?
I only hear, like you say, filtered via parents. Yeah. I don't hear that now.
No, that's good.
You couldn't treat kids.
You can't.
You wouldn't be able to get away with it.
I think
you?
The whole world has changed. The whole safeguarding, parental involvement, you know, they're much more interested, engaged. You know, with respect to our age, we were dropped off, in you go, you come home, how was it? Yeah, it was fine. You know what I mean? And there's no checks and boundaries in that time. Mm. And in the story, it's important that there's no management there. It's being run by the players. So even if you're feeling what's happening is completely wrong, you're not going to anybody with that.
Yeah.
You know, because that's not going to go anywhere. And all you're probably going to get, it's just weak.
Yeah.
You know, if you go and do this. So I just think the whole check system, safeguard, it's all going to be far superior, I'm presuming, because I just don't think you can do what they were doing there.
It's not there's some lovely sports stories in there. One you just tell me I've actually not got round to yet, but football features in a few. It's a beautiful one at the end of the book, which has cricket as a backdrop. Very moving story. But the other ones I've read so far, and I'm still going through it, it's a couple on out in the Atlantic on a ship, two removal men. There's different stories. There's a hotelier in London. But so what? Tell us, Jim, what is the kind of link with all these stories?
So I sat down. I'd lost my dad about 5 or 6 years before, and then I lost a good friend who was actually at Palace with me, Andy Barnes. And when I sat down to write them, I thought, I'm just going to write these. I had a few ideas. And once I started writing, I read the back of the there's a lot of men here. There's a lot of dads. There's a lot of male friendship. There's a bit of grief. There's a lot about class. There's a lot about race, I think. So they're really what runs through them. And whether you're in the hotel at a party, on the removals in football, the themes are sort of a certain sort of, I guess, brittle masculinity and maleness. And in a lot of the stories, the men are protected by either their circle of friends or the organisations they are in, whether it's a football club, the hotel or a bank. And then it's kind of exploring what happens when they're taken out of that and then they struggle a bit.
Yeah. And short stories are difficult because you've got to establish the characters very, very quickly, haven't you? Because you want to sort of hook people and they want to sort of stick with it. So, I mean, I think you've done that incredibly well. You know, you almost from page one, you're going to want to buy into these people and know more about them.
Yeah, I think that's the... I do it a lot with dialogue, I think. Mm. I think they're quite dialogue strong. There's also a theme of South London. I'm from Croydon. I grew up around the area. My family are all from there. So that's probably another theme through it. And I like to hear the people talking, and that's, I think you can capture people quickly from what they say.
Sure.
So probably that's how the main technique I probably use. Mm.
These experiences that you had must help you in your daytime job. I presume it's a mixed environment, is it?
It is.
Yeah, because we hear so much now about boys and young boys and the difficulties that they have. You know,
I think it's incredibly important that there are role models for all children, but especially boys coming through the school system.
Mm.
And I've worked in a secondary school and I'm now in a primary school. And I just think it's so important that they have great role models of both genders in their life. Mm. Especially you do see the boys looking, seeking that affirmation, especially if it's missing in their life in some way. So I think it's hugely important, that sort of modelling. You know, this is how we try and behave as good people, you know.
Yeah, you know, the culture was, just to make this point, they use the word woke all the time. This is woke, that's woke. But when you read that chapter about what went on in that dressing room, woke's a blooming good thing, isn't it?
I know, that's exactly it. You know, it gets labelled. And I just, but you know, pre-woke, no checks, no, if you want to say, political correctness, no kind of policies, no procedures to safeguard anybody. Well, you get what you get. And if you allow that to happen in what is an ultra-competitive environment with, you know, 20-something men, very successful, famous, talented, and you let them just run, you're going to get the brutal environment you get. Yeah. And so you think, a bit of wokeness is a good thing here. You know, it's used pejoratively, but it's actually should we try and be a bit nicer and help and be kinder?
Do you keep in touch with Gareth Southgate and Andy Woodman still?
Yeah, he's assured me that he's going to give me full and frank feedback on the stories, Gareth. Good. And I think he said to me that he's going to read one live during the Euros, you know. I think that's what he said. I think
it's been, hasn't that been one of Gareth's strengths about how he's dealt with these young players, these young men, and moulded them and let them feel free and speak?
And did you see that? It's interesting. I wonder if you kind of saw that early on when you were kind of kids.
I think what's very interesting is he's always been bright, measured, reflective, and very able to adapt to environments. He's very good at that. And I think what's really interesting is that in this pretty brutal environment, I don't know what the direct influence is, but we are the result of our influences. And his management leadership style is entirely different. It's about, you know, belonging, feeling comfortable, expressing yourself, understanding where you're coming from, leaving the shirt in a better place than you find it, all of those things. And just, as you're saying, Andy, you know, these environments do shape you and you sort of come through that furnace. And I find it a bit at school. It's very interesting. I reflected thinking, well, actually, the most important thing for me in a school is culture. Mm. I want good people. I want people who are positive, who are supportive, who are going to work together. And I think Gareth, he feels similar in his environment. So whether it's a response to this or it's a, I don't know what it is, but it's interesting where it's led him.
Mm. Well, lovely to see you, John. We wish you well with the book. It's called We Aim to Live, a collection of short stories. It's published by Troubadour, troubadour.co.uk. You can find details over there. It's on Amazon. It's sold out.
Sold out on Amazon.
Very pleasingly, it's sold out. They're restocking.
All good bookshops will find it.
Thank you very much.
Are you a Palace fan, finally?
I was there Monday night. It was interesting. On the back of this, I didn't go to football for a long time.
Yeah.
And my best pal talked me into a season ticket this year. And I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And so Monday was a good night.
Certainly was. Excellent. Cheers, John. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
John Budden's book, We Aim to Live, is available now.
Kevin Day's happy now. We've done a lot on Palace.
We have done a lot on Palace. Kev was railing against TalkSport the other day. Kev, is that enough Palace for you? Elliot Steele, John Budden. Blimey.
Do you know what?
You start dressing like an eagle.
I saw Elliot Steele and thought, I used to teach with his mum.
Really?
I thought, I'm not going to tell him.
Yeah. The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Here we are. That's how it all unfolded this afternoon. I'll be here tomorrow with Charlie Baker, although Andy will be popping up with the birthday spread.
That's right.
You pleased with the quality of the material this week?
No.
Bit ropey?
I had to do it on Monday. And
a few retreads in there or not?
Well,
is it all original pirate material?
I'll do my best. It needs a bit of polishing.
Okay,
overnight.
Needs a lot of polishing by the sound of it.
Yeah.
So no sleep for Andy tonight as he polishes those gags. We'll see you tomorrow from 1. Do hope you can join us. If not, the podcast is always available at 4. Have a good evening.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.